On this week's 51%, hear from a professor about where women stand in the film industry given the Academy Award nominees.
There's just not enough opportunity for women and for women of color, especially in film and television.
Learn about Minnesota's first women-only theater company, and a teen gives her take on dating. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%. The Academy Awards are February 24th, and a professor at Vassar College in Poughkeepsie, New York, says the Oscar nominations are a strong indication that the Academy and Hollywood are finally taking hashtag MeToo and hashtag OscarSoWhite to heart. Dr. Mia Mask is the author of Divas on Screen, Black Women in American Film. At Vassar, she teaches African-American cinema, documentary history, and seminars on special film topics. She also teaches feminist film theory, African national cinemas, and genre courses. Mask has written film reviews and covered festivals for IndieWire.com, The Village Voice, Film Quarterly, Time Out New York, and more. I asked her what she thought of this year's nominees and what they speak to during movements such as Me Too.
Well, I'm delighted to see so many films with strong female leads, with strong female characters at the heart of the narrative. So in the heart of the hashtag MeToo movement, it's great to see that there are some films that are representing strong women's voices and strong personalities. So I'm delighted to see Roma has been nominated for Best Picture, and really happy that The Favorite and even A Star Is Born, right, are all films with really strong female characters, among others. So not to mention Black Panther. So it's a glimmer of hope, let's say.
What is still missing? Clearly, there's always work to be done. So how much have we carved out in this arena?
Well, we've carved out some strong women characters, but I would definitely like to see more women at the helm of these projects. So actually in the director's chair, not so much in front of the camera, but behind the camera, it's still exceedingly difficult for women to get a hold of these big budgets for some of the bigger blockbuster or tentpole films. So while we may see some shifts or changes in some of the representation in front of the camera, I would really like to see more women empowered behind the camera, behind the scenes, and in the studios.
You mentioned big budgets, and isn't funding part of the reason why?
Absolutely. So it's about funding for the kinds of projects women want to do, as well as a female director having the gravitas to be able to bring in the funding for the pictures that some women directors want to direct.
Any more comments on film? Now, I saw The Favorite, so I could talk about that a bit.
Did you like that?
I did, actually. I liked it very much because I liked how it showed foibles, and I liked how it showed a mix, especially with the queen role, a mix of strength and weakness. And you can have weaker parts to you, we all do, but it doesn't bring you down. And I really like that portrayal of a woman because it seemed to me, even as a queen, I mean, what would I know about that? It just seemed a little more real and a little more relatable.
Absolutely. I mean, they make her a three-dimensional character who has desires, who knows she's struggling with illness, who has to manage, juggle, deal with both her undesirability, but her wants and desires, and the ways in which those have compromised her. So there's absolutely a lot of complexity there. And you're right, it's nice to finally see roles in which women are depicted with more complexity, and it's not so much about their sexuality or their desirability.
Exactly, and I really like the cunning that was portrayed among the three women because, you know, women can be very cutthroat in very different ways, and I really like that portrayal of outwitting the next. And that also, again, not being in a monarchy, that seemed rather real to me. I really did enjoy that. Anyway, what other roles or films do you want to dive into? Please feel free.
Sure. I loved Roma. I'm so impressed by this film. I mean, Alphonse Cuarón does great work, but I particularly liked Roma because, once again, not only do you have strong women, but you have women in relationship to one another, partnering and supporting each other. So it's so nice to see the way the mother in this family, who is struggling with her marriage, and obviously the marriage is changing and disintegrating, she supports the young woman who is, you know, domestic in her home, because they both have been abandoned in some ways by their male partners. And so it's wonderful to see that kind of sisterhood, that kind of support, that kind of feminine strength being extended from one woman to another. And I love the scene where she tells her, you know, just remember, women we might you know, be alone, but we're going to support one another. And so I thought that, those were very powerful moments. So I'd love to see the support that that Cleo receives from her employer, from Sophia, and the bond between Sophia and Cleo is impressive.
Now, you talked a little earlier about how women are making headway in film, not so much behind the camera, more in front. But now, are we talking white women? Are we talking younger women? Because there is criticism about minority women being underrepresented in stories being told, as well as older women.
Absolutely. I think we need to see more women of color behind the camera and in executive decision-making positions in the film industry, as well as more women. We're certainly seeing pockets or places where that's happening. So hats off to both Oprah Winfrey and Ava DuVernay for all of the work that they've been doing both in television and film to democratize and to make access possible for women of color. I love that Ava DuVernay insists on using women directors, and she uses white women as well as women of color. But her commitment to women directors is just so impressive. But, you know, there's just far and few between in terms of opportunity. There's just not enough opportunity for women and for women of color, especially in film and television.
Now, what about feminist film? Is there such a category anymore? I mean, what divides, what separates, what makes a feminist film versus a film about women?
Well, I think there are many brands of feminism that are available for women to claim. And one can be a liberal feminist, one can be a radical feminist, and this complicates the answer to the question of, is there feminist film? So I think there are feminist films out there, absolutely, but it really depends on what brand of feminism we're talking about. And so I think that there are feminist films that are being made. They may not be at the multiplex or winning Academy Awards or getting nominations, but there are certainly feminist films and feminist film practice out there. And then, to be fair, I do think that some of the films we're seeing today, the mainstream films, have a feminist undercurrent. The Favorite or Mary Queen of Scots, and even to some extent, something that's been remade four times, like A Star is Born, has a feminist undercurrent definitely running through it, of self-determination, of desire to have both family and career, or to have a partner and a career. I think that there are definitely feminist strains. And so it's not just women's rights, but also women struggling to figure out how to negotiate the challenges that are presented to us because society still is not equal and fair.
Now, you teach this subject, so I want to know if you've ever struggled, perhaps, or are really hard-pressed to come up with a film that represents women in a certain way. I mean, is there a type of film that needs to be made that's not out there yet? So sometimes when you look for an example of a certain film in class or something, you can't find it. Is there something about portrayal that we're missing out there?
Yes, I would like to see more films with women characters where women are supporting one another in struggles and in professional arenas. I would like to see films in which women are engaged in sisterhood and in loving relationships. We also don't see films with queer female characters very often. Or if we do, they have to be films in which these women are punished or neglected or become outsiders. So I'd like to see films that complicate the conventional representations of women and women's relationships, as well as the ways women support each other. I'd like to see more films with interracial friendships and relationships between women. So there's absolutely room for the kinds of films that are not present, that are missing from the sort of feminist film landscape. You might find them more in alternative cinema, but there's definitely room for more of these in the mainstream cinema.
Now, what about films young women and girls will see? I mean, lots appear to be adaptations of comic books or video games, superheroes. Are there strong women and girls in these films to serve as role models? I mean, are there strong women here? I mean, a certain age group of girls may not be seated in front of the favorite, right?
It's a great point. I think there are strong female characters in movies for younger girls. So I think that even a film like Black Panther has characters that are strong female characters. Danai Gurira plays Okoye, or Lupita Nyong'o plays Nakia in Black Panther. And these are both strong women with integrity, with voice, both physically strong and intellectually brave, and they're impressive. But the fact of the matter is there are just too few and far between in terms of these representations, right? So you get one Black Panther, but then you really don't have much more in the way. And as you say, it tends to be in the fantasy film, the Marvel adaptation, as opposed to the more realist cinema, the cinema of everyday life or a cinema of everyday experience, where these roles are seen. So if it can only be in the fantastic, then it doesn't seem as real, as relatable, as the young women and girls coming up today really need these images to be.
Thank you. Yeah, it just seems to me that they leave the theater and may think, okay, that was fun, but then there's really nothing to process or think about there.
Exactly. And there's no way that it's really applicable to everyday experience if it's in a far-off land like Wakanda or if it's in a futuristic sci-fi landscape. It's not necessarily in the everyday struggles. You know, one film that's an example of this that didn't get a nomination but is definitely an example of a film with a strong young female character is The Hate U Give. And I was impressed by the strong young woman played by Amandla Sternberg. She plays Star Carter, and she's grappling with a number of things. Number one, living in two worlds, the community, the African-American community, the inner city community that she resides in, and then the affluent, predominantly white prep school that she attends during the day. And she's got to negotiate moving between the poles of these two very different existences and lifestyles. And she does well, and then she also has to negotiate the reality of police brutality and racial profiling. So this is a film that has a strong female character and very positive messages that are relatable and that speak to everyday experience.
Thank you for that. And I was just thinking how I've read recently some statistics from industry reports showing that women make up the majority of moviegoers. So the audience is weighted more toward female viewers overall, right? So yet, look at the films.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully what that means is we'll begin to see more films like The Hate U Give and like Widows and like A Star Is Born and Mary Queen of Scots that depict strong female characters as opposed to simply a rash of hero films or Superman, superhero pictures that put cast women at the side or in the back sidelines or in the background.
Now, what about the voting? I'm thinking of the Academy and Academy membership. So are there older white men voting on these films and should something change here?
Well, absolutely. The membership of the Academy must diversify. But I think even the Academy's begun to get that message. I know in recent years they've had a change at the helm of their leadership, and I think they're beginning to think about Oscar So White hashtag and its impact. But they absolutely need to diversify their membership because, as you say, sure, it would be nice if these films were being directed by women. That will definitely change the landscape. But it would be important for our cultural institutions to also have more diversity and representation. That said, we don't want to put all our cultural eggs in the Academy's basket so that they are the sole arbiters of value and of artistic merit. And one of the things I worry is that for mainstream America, the Academy still has so much power in terms of determining artistic merit, you know?
That was Mia Mask, film professor at Vassar College in Poughkeepsie, New York. And we'll stay in the arts with a mini history of Minnesota's first women-only theater company, formed in 1976 At the foot of the Mountain Theater staged plays written by women and transformed those written by men. KFAI's Dixie Trichel brings us the piece.
We were very over on the radical edge of looking at feminism and women's power and how women could put together these very experimental, very edgy plays. And we worked together. It was a very collaborative experience. My name is Martha Bozing. We threw the I Ching and we got at the foot of the mountain, which seemed cuckoo to us. So then we threw it again and it said, never ask the same question twice. So we called it At the Foot of the Mountain. In 1974, we did a play called River Journal, which I had written, and I directed it. And it was a huge, huge success. The women from all over the city coming who had not seen women's theater like this before. And that's when others joined us, and we became a group that began to perform regularly. We had songs in almost every show. It was a woman-only company, and when there were male characters, they were played by the women.
I got an itch to go dancing with the coal miner's wife, 'cause she's bursting all over to experience life. She's gonna break my heart in two if she don't put on her dancing shoes.
We did a lot of audience work. We would often involve the audience in our play in one way or another. This one play called Raped, based on Bertolt Brecht's The Exception and the Rule. And then we interrupted it with stories of rape. So what we did was we invited the audience to stop the play. All they'd have to do is stand up and say, stop. And we would stop cold, whether we were in the middle of the scene, and let that person tell their story. And some people told stories of being raped. And once we had a man stand up and said, I just realized that I raped my girlfriend, and it had never occurred to me before. So anyway, it became a very dynamic, amazing piece. It's probably one of our most important pieces.
Lori Witzkowski. I was a company member for several years. It was so great to be a full-time employed actor. We worked a 40-hour week. Process was very important to the work. How you approach the work really created the work. And the work was all original. And often Martha would come in with an idea and sort of an outline. And then we would do a lot of talking, thinking, dreaming, and a lot of improvising. We created the pieces on our feet. The notion that the personal is political and the political is personal was really important.
My name is Esther Ray. I was also a company member at the Foot of the Mountain Theater. And we were the longest running all women's theater company at the time. Together we did Haunted by the Holy Ghost. We got picketed. Everybody had been raised Catholic except for me, who was in the show. So it was really about growing up Catholic. And we each played a saint. And Junkie was about addiction and recovery. That was a great experience. I was young and naive and ignorant, and it was just a really good political education and emotional education. I really grew up through the process of creating those shows.
Lebanon's new interior minister has taken office, becoming the country's and the Arab world's first female official in charge of powerful security agencies. Raya Al-Hassan took over as part of a new government, named after nearly 9 months of deadlock. She is one of four women in the 30-member cabinet, an historic record for female political representation in Lebanon. She will be in charge of multiple, often competing security agencies, and of maintaining stability where, until recently, the country has grappled with militant groups and limited spillover from the war next door in Syria. Al-Hassan in 2009 became the region's first female finance minister. In a month where Valentine's Day is blotted on the calendar, here's a piece about not necessarily love, but dating. Immigrants can often have their feet in two or more cultures. And that's the case for Philly Youth Radio's Yingqi Chen, a first-generation Chinese immigrant, and at the time of this piece, a high school sophomore. She has one foot planted in U.S. culture and the other in the lessons her parents teach her.
I love watching Chinese soap operas at home. But when a love scene comes up, if my mom's around, I can't watch in peace. She starts yelling, and tells me I shouldn't do what the characters on TV are doing. I tell her she shouldn't worry because I'm not even interested in dating. But when I asked to interview her to see why she felt that way, she got upset and didn't want to talk about it. So I asked my friend, who I'll call Jane, about her mom.
When my mom walked on the street, she always saw a lot of young people holding hands and kissing. And then when she comes home, she will tell me, no, no, you can't date. Don't date at young age. Don't let me see you holding hands with another guy.
Most of my Chinese immigrant friends have the same experience. Their parents told them not to date and to focus more on education.
My mom got married at a very young age. He was like introduced by a person, and then she married my father. And she always said to me that if she didn't marry my father, she will have a lot of opportunity to get a good job, a good education, and probably a better guy.
When I talk to other Chinese immigrant teens, I notice most of their parents were formally introduced to their partners. In their world, there's no such thing as dating. And that's the problem for me. In the US, we're expected to date, while our parents want us to follow the old rules. This can cause problems, especially when kids date without their parents' permission. Like Jane. In 7th grade, she spent all her time with a boyfriend and hid it from her parents.
And then there's one time I lied to my mom that I'm doing schoolwork in school, and actually I'm just out there like sitting in the park with him. And then my mom told me that she was waiting at the bus stop, bending there with my brother. And it was in the winter, and I felt very ashamed about that.
Since then, Jane has decided to take a break from dating, but she still struggles with liking guys.
And I'm always tell myself that I'm not really liking that person. I'm just having some feeling about them. And after a while, that feeling will disappear, and then I will become normal again, and then another feeling, and then disappear again, and then another one, and continuously.
But enough from the kids. Let's see what dating means to parents.
Can you introduce yourself?
Mrs. Pang was born in Hong Kong. She met Mr. Pang through his sister. Mrs. Pang says that in her culture, dating was forbidden. And when a girl got married, if she wasn't a virgin, her husband could just divorce her. Mrs. Pang says that's why Chinese immigrant parents are so against their kids dating.
I'm Crystal Pang, the daughter of Fan, who you just interviewed.
Crystal remembers that she was taught not to date when she was young, but she dated anyway in her senior year of high school. And she's been with the same guy for 7 years. They even have their parents' support now. And as Crystal has reached her mid-20s, she's noticed that Chinese immigrant parents eventually encourage relationships in their own strange way.
I actually have a few friends who are going through that right now. Their parents are sometimes suggesting people that they've never met before that are from California when the person lives here. The mom even went so far as to show my friend a video of this guy giving a PowerPoint presentation.
Here's what I think. Parents have good intentions for banning dating, but it's too much control over kids' freedom. Children's decisions may be wrong, but parents should be beside them, helping them. And who knows? Maybe one can find true love at a young age, like Crystal has.
This story was produced by Yingqi Chen and Philly Youth Radio, a project that works with local high school students to report radio stories that matter to them. That's our show for this week. Thanks to Patrick Garrett and Elizabeth Hill for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1543.